We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
People are expecting quite a bit.
This is your time.
You want to win? You're going to be like this.
There are no shortcuts in life.
You'll get better because you make each other better.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
I know plenty of people that are capable. I know fewer people that are willing.
You have to believe it to do it.
Now, what are you going to do?
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Sideline Sessions here on the Beef Podcast Network. It's my pleasure, as always, to have you with us. And I'm really happy to bring you a conversation here that touches on a lot of the topics that many of you are probably wanting to know about. My guest today is Jared Zeidman. Jared has 15 years experience in college athletics as a basketball coach, and he's also the author of a new book called Nail the Recruiting Process. We'll be talking a lot about that today. In order to help young people stay ahead of the curve, Jared interviewed countless athletes and coaches, and he created a methodology to help athletes not just get recruited to the college of their dreams, but flourish once they get there. The book dives deep into data from the college coaching community that suggests the college athletics landscape is changing rapidly. So you'll want to hear what he has to say here. Jared, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So I gave a very, kind of brief background there, but there's more to your story. So I'd love you to share a little bit with our listeners what your experience was in coaching in the college level, and then how you transitioned to what you currently have been focused on and the research you did in writing this book.
Sure. I'll do my best to give it in what the cool kids call the TLDR version. I feel like I can relate a lot to both coaches and young athletes because I sort of got into this in an unconventional way. And at every step, I had to kind of work my way towards the next thing. So I'll start by saying I did not play college basketball. I was not a disciplined high school student. I got part of the book actually dives into how I sort of had an awakening with a guidance counselor that was like, I need you to pick it up so that we can, make your dreams a reality and we can get you to college. And I got into one college and it ended up being a transformative experience for me and sort of paved my path for wanting to then work in higher ed and pay it forward. So from 2009 to last spring, 2023, I was involved in intercollegiate athletics in some capacity. This has ranged from being a graduate intern at a D1 program to being a volunteer assistant, moving all the way up to associate head. And in the last 3 years of my Division III career, standing head coach. And I had an incredible mentor named Mary Ellen Burt, who was really trying to sort of develop and groom me to be ready for any responsibility after that. And it was an incredible opportunity. I then had an opportunity to work at Canisius University as an assistant coach. We were hired to rebuild the program. Coach Sahar Nusebe is doing a phenomenal job. As we record this, actually, the team has just clinched their best regular season record in more than 15 years. So I would say the rebuild is well underway. The reason why I'm saying they a lot is because my role with the team has changed a lot in the last 12 months. So in 2022, right after our season ended, actually a little less than 2 years ago, I got COVID for the first time. Was fine when I had it, but in about 4 to 6 weeks after having it, had a series of major shutdowns in my immune system that required medical interventions and a lot of different sort of recovery methodologies. And then over the course of the next year, the young people can relate to this one, as I quote, toughed it out and tried to continue working through it, it just became abundantly clear from a medical perspective that my body wasn't up to it. So right now, Ross, I'm just in a population of people that had major autoimmune system dysfunction after getting COVID. I am way better than I was, which is phenomenal. But I am still in a point where I have to work in very limited bunches. They're actually referred to as energy envelopes. So I'm just not ready to return to the sidelines quite yet. The shift for me is that the basketball community really had my back, and I got fed a couple really fun opportunities once I couldn't work in coaching, just to sort of consult, working with both coaches on the collegiate side, but also helping to guide high school students through the recruiting process. And essentially, that's where the journey began. I realized that there were a lot of pain points, and I set out to write a book that addressed those pain points. And I would say that's where we are. The book comes out later this spring. It's getting really positive feedback from the coaching community so far, and I'm very excited to share it with high school athletes and their parents.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, MyFlex Learning. Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it totally worth exploring. There's more time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it, dedicated time for intervention, and overall, as school leaders, it provides you and your faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in. It can hold you back from ensuring students make good use of their time. That's why I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with the seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. If you want to see for yourself, visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. You'll learn all about MyFlex Learning, what it can do for your school, and you'll receive a $500 off offer for your first year. Check it out. Yeah, excellent. And we're going to get into some of the great stuff in the book and kind of building that bridge between your experience directly as a coach at various collegiate levels and then working on this book, looking at things maybe from a different angle, a different perspective, talking to different people to see where they're coming from. Are there things that stand out that you either learned through this process that you maybe weren't even aware of at all before, or just got a new perspective on to kind of see what are all those moving parts of the recruiting process, stuff that even though you were in it as a coach may have been hidden from you, or maybe you didn't realize how important it was?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the easiest way I can answer it is with a resounding yes. Okay. I'll start by saying that the major problem I have identified is what I will describe to you as a clashing of two normals. The world of intercollegiate athletics moves at lightning speed. Coaching is a very demanding job. It's way more demanding on the athletes. They have to give a considerable amount of their time and energy. And this is not just at the scholarship level. These are D3 athletes that are putting in a minimum of 20 hours a week on their sport when they're in season. And what happens is it becomes normalized. So on one side, you have the coaches and the athletes who are like, yep, this is my normal. And on the other side, there's the high school coaches, the AAU coaches, and the prospective athletes who see exclusively the glamorous parts of it. Mm-hmm. Like right now, Caitlin Clark is having this incredible season. And I can guarantee you that a question that's not being asked in every high school circle is, hey, how hard is Caitlin Clark working behind the scenes to accomplish all this? And what does an Iowa practice actually look like? And you know, what do I need to do if I actually want to play at that level? So the biggest piece of information and the thing that really propelled me to want to write the guide is that I asked 50 college coaches, almost a perfect split between scholarship and non-scholarship, scale of 1 to 10, how much does the average high school recruit get it? 10 would be they completely got it. 1 would be they didn't get it at all. And the average response, regardless of division or competitive level, was a 3.5. So in my mind, I was like, okay, we got to address disconnects here. And that's kind of what set me on this journey. And the book really talks about those disconnects specifically in getting it. How do you develop a better attitude? How do you make yourself more recruitable? And then how do you show up on day one without going through the gigantic shock that a lot of people go through, because a college coach just assumes you have someone in your corner explaining it to you. And oftentimes you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure some of those elements, like the hard work required, right? And the amount of hours you're putting in. And again, the fact that we see, you know, what we see on TV or in the media is the tip of the iceberg as far as the highest profile sports, the most glamorous programs, the top athletes. But there's all these other sports and all these other levels where athletes are working just as hard, just as much, and balancing their academics and everything else. And those things are true over time, always. And yet there's also a lot of things that are changing, right? And I referred to this a little bit in my intro about the rapidly changing athletics landscape. But what are some of those things that you observed are like quickly changing that people should be aware of?
Yeah, there's an old leadership phrase called intent versus impact. And the idea is when you're leading change, you're working on changing an organization, you always do things with the best intentions, but you oftentimes don't really know what the impact that you're making when you make changes is until after you've done it. And you have to just sort of assess it really quickly. For college sports, I would say football and basketball are the most publicized ones of this, but this is actually like endemic of all college sports. That impact that's happening real time is the adjustments made to the transfer portal after the COVID shutdown. So what this essentially looks like for your listeners that are maybe less informed or newer to the subject, it used to be that when you transfer to school at the scholarship level, you would have to sit out a year in order to then play at the new school. And this, in my opinion, was not fair to the athletes, because no matter how many athletes transfer, they actually transfer at lower rates than regular students. So you can't, as the NCAA on one side, argue that these are just regular students that are amateur athletes and then hold them to different standards. So the intent was perfectly well placed. Now people can transfer. Here's the impact, though. Last year, 20% of scholarship level basketball was in the transfer portal. So that's literally 1 in 5 college athletes with college experience was in the transfer portal. What this is unintentionally impacting is the high school recruiting pool. And my sort of why for wanting to work with high school students and their parents is I want them to understand, if you don't take this process a bit more seriously, there is less incentive now for a college coach to quote unquote take a risk on you. So let's just say you and a college athlete are talent equals, but you are a bit on the shy side. And when a coach asks you how you want to be coached, you don't really know how to respond, and you're kind of a dud in person. And that's not a bad thing. This happens to a lot of high school kids. But the difference now is you're doing that campus visit on a Tuesday, and on a Wednesday, the kid that's visiting campus is a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. So the tilting scale, if you will, is towards transfers. And what you're seeing in real time is coaches recruiting less directly out of high school. And that is trickling down all the way to the Division III level, where multiple teams made NCAA tournament runs with transfer portals.
Yeah. I mean, certainly at right again to those, some of those high profile sports, high profile programs, you know, people who follow college sports a little bit may have seen some of the stories of coaches who basically took over programs with the plan to build through that transfer portal, right? And I'm sure that that affects, I mean, the high school recruiting in countless ways, some of which maybe we don't even fully know yet, right? But as far as the timing of things, as far as getting clarity on how serious is a program about bringing you in, if they're trying to figure out, well, if we can get this transfer, we have, so, especially on a basketball roster, right, where you have such limited roster spots and limited scholarships, for example, or other sports where you only have so many spots. And well, we kind of like this kid, and we, you know, and that goes to, I think, one of the pieces of, are there parts of the process that, from your perspective, are you're concerned about, right? Things that are particularly important, maybe for young athletes, for their parents to be looking out for, things that might register as red flags to you, or just things, areas where there's common misunderstandings, right, about a program's relative level of interest, or the way in which certain coaches may or may not handle the process, or just systemic things, right? Whatever it may be, that whether it's stuff that's related to shifting, you know, the shifting landscape, or just longstanding issues, but, you know, things that are kind of like, watch out for this, be aware of this, because it could be a, you know, a problem if you're not paying attention.
That is a great question, Ross. And I'm going to appeal as a lifelong video game enthusiast. I'm going to appeal to your youngins with either a Madden or an NBA 2K create a player example. I want you to imagine that there are multiple attributes. So if you think about Madden and the coveted getting a 99 in Madden, that means that your attributes are maxed out in every stat. Mm-hmm. What it tends to actually look like, though, across positions for normal athletes is you have one incredible attributes and then the rest are kind of like sprinkled. So for example, teams will find a role for a recruit that is literally the fastest human being on the floor or the hardest working rebounder on the floor. And what I want recruits to understand is their soft skills that have absolutely nothing to do with their actual talent in the sport when you're being recruited are also skill attributes that coaches are evaluating. So I want you to think of four, Ross, and I think this will help your listeners. This is a little bit of an oversimplification, but it will help them visualize.
Sure.
Tier one is your talent. And obviously there's a talent floor and talent ceiling for every level until you get to the very top, which is Power 5 D1, and that's the ceiling. But then aside from talent, there's your attitude. What is it? How are you carrying yourself? I guess is the best way to say it, when you're on the floor. What is your talk like with your teammates? How are you handling coaches? Then there's your resilience, which is something doesn't go your way. How are you responding to it? If you miss an open shot, do you go back on defense and get the next stop? And then more importantly, are you inclined to still shoot the next time that you're open? What's your mindset like? And then the last one, and I think this is the one that people need the biggest level of improvement on, what is your communication like? And what's happening is coaches are willing to sacrifice one of those attributes if, kind of like the Madden example, you fly up the other. Like if you have the best attitude ever, one of the things I learned in the data that I was floored by is coaches are willing to take on a kid with less talent if they just know that that kid, like sight, first watch, that's a future captain. They're willing to take that kid. And you've seen examples all over sports where oftentimes the locker room leader is not the key player. But once you're deficient in multiple attributes, that's when coaches start putting up the red flags. So if you have a bad game and you also have a really bad attitude game, that could be a red flag. If you are just not confident on the floor and not resilient on the floor, that could be a red flag. So I want young people to understand that this process is much more holistic than they think. College coaches are not just recruiting kids that they think can be successful. The baseline for admission is, can you handle it? And they have to find kids they can handle it.
Yeah. And of course that, as you said, talent being the tier one piece, often determinative of how much are coaches willing to compromise on the others, or how much do the other factors need to kind of bring up the overall profile, right? To say, okay, this athlete is relatively not quite as talented as the other, but they're really, you know, they have great attitude, great communication. They'll make the whole larger than the sum of its parts. They'll be a great part of the team, right?
100%.
And, you know, of course, all the things beyond that are, is this student athlete going to be able to stay in school, right? Things like that, that you're not much good to a coach if you're failing your classes and you're not eligible to participate and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, hopefully there's a reasonable level of understanding of that, but it's another piece that's, it needs to be understood, the how important that is and how, depending on the schools and programs you want to target. And that's one thing I want to talk about as well, is how do high school athletes get kind of an accurate evaluation of where they stand, right? A confirmation of their abilities, of the types of schools and programs and levels, you know, D1, 2, 3, et cetera, where they should be looking. Because, right, with so much out there, so many athletes, so many schools, so much social media, right, there, it is important for athletes to take an active role in their own recruiting and not just wait for somebody to come find them. And yeah, also like take ownership of their lives in general, right? Go where you want to be, not don't wait for somebody to tell you. But yeah, how do I know as a young athlete or as a parent of a student athlete where I should even be looking? How talented really is my kid? Where do they fit in?
So I want to tackle this answer in two parts. And the cool thing about part one is it's not from me. This is directly out of the mouths of current and former college athletes that I interview. And a common theme from what they shared with me is, to put it concisely, they didn't always love how honest their mentors were with them when they were in high school, but they realized that they had a leg up on people who didn't have mentors that were honest with them. So a section of the book that I'm willing to share now is how you find that mentor. I would strongly encourage players to touch base with either a high school coach, a local AAU coach, a local skills trainer, someone that can give them an honest assessment of either existing game film or going through a workout in person with the coach. And most of the time, and emphasis on most, not all, but most of the time, a high school coach or an AAU coach is well-networked and can help you find the right person. In the odd chance that you aren't, I volunteer to eval you. Like, I think we're only talking about like 0.1% of the population. I'm that confident it's going to happen that way. You'll learn very quickly who your mentor is by the way they talk to you when they give you that eval. If they look at you and they just say nothing but good things, and they insist that you're the next big thing because you're 6 feet tall and can tie your shoes, that's not your mentor. You have to find someone that's willing to give you direct and honest feedback specifically about the strengths and limitations, not only of your game, but the best ones, the strengths and limitations of how you're actually behaving on the court. You get called for a travel. What's your behavior look like? Are you high-fiving teammates? Are you leading? Or are you sort of just kind of a passenger? And there are great mentors out there that do this. Those mentors will then assess you in terms of where your fit is. Oftentimes, the biggest challenge is because all you grow up watching is UConn and South Carolina, and in this generation, Caitlin Clark in Iowa, oftentimes you don't want to hear anything besides, I'm a D1 athlete. And this is where part two comes in. I see a lot of athletes that could have tremendous college careers, and I want them to, not just because of the sports thing, but because athletes have so many life skills that they build up in college that help them professionally, and they shine in interview processes. They shine on teams at professional levels. I want more of them to have that experience in college. So part two is, you think you're D1 or bust. I want you to reach out to a local D2 or D1 coach, and I want you to ask them if you can come in and watch either a practice or an individual workout. I've never, and I repeat, never met any college coach that would say no to this, because they want to help grow the game. And if you watch a D3 or D2 kid work out, it will blow your mind as a high school kid. You're like, oh my God, these kids actually get held to the same exact standards as the D1 kids. This is just as serious. Practice is really intense. The athletes are all about it. And I think those two combined experiences, actually exploring every level and finding the correct mentorship, combines to send you on the right track.
Excellent. Yeah. And right. Those mentors can be so important. Mentors who really know what they're talking about and are willing to tell you, right? And then willing right. to be clear about the areas where you need to improve or where you should be looking. And there are so many different options out there, and getting that, but getting that direct experience with what's the level of discipline, a level of competition, a level of hard work, certainly can provide a totally new perspective. For these athletes, let's say they, and we'll kind of get into a couple of more of the details, but we've sort of touched around this as once they are having some pretty good insights about these things that the coaches are looking for, maybe they're getting some good guidance from mentors, they're having a sense of schools that they're interested in. How do they show that they, how do they demonstrate basically that they fit the qualities that these coaches are looking for? You talked about communication, things like that, but right, what are the ways if I'm interacting, I'm on a recruiting visit, I'm otherwise trying to get in touch with a program, demonstrating that I understand, like I do get it, right? What's required, yes. And that I'm the person that you want in your team.
So there are two routes that you can go down, and I am heavily biased against one of the routes, which I'll explain that one first. Route number one is you hire a service that basically helps network, that tries to connect some dots on your behalf. One of the good things that those services do is that they assess you and they try to find the fit for you. But I think where those services fall short is if you're not the one doing it and taking the initiative, you still run the risk of having that gigantic shock when you show up on day one. What I would encourage you to do is literally do homework. Budget time in your week where you and your family are looking up schools. And you start by asking yourself a couple really critical awareness questions. Where do I want to go to school? In region, out of region? Do I want to live on? Do I want to commute? And once you sort of filter through the what I would describe as the regular college search questions, then you're going to literally email members of the coaching staffs at those schools. The number one way that you can show your interest is by calling and emailing a coach on your own. And the reason why that's so important is because the pendulum is all the way to one extreme side in the year 2024, which is that I can tell you this because I've lived it. All these coaches get are mass emails from services. And most coaches, myself included, did nothing more than power skim them if they didn't delete them outright. Because the way I'm looking at it as a coach is, if this individual doesn't even want to take the effort to reach out to me directly, how are they possibly going to handle what I have in store for them once they arrive to campus? So any steps that you can take as an individual, and I'll use a word very intentionally here, humanize the process for you. Mm-hmm. Send the emails yourself, make the calls yourself. When you're on the phone with a coach, show that you did a little bit of homework, almost like honestly high school job interview prep, like show mm-hmm. that you kind of know a little bit about what's going on. Those are huge things that will be differentiators. And again, going back to that attitude thing, if you take that initiative, the coach immediately thinks to themselves, okay, add the attitude stat is a check. That would be my immediate first advice.
Yeah, that's an important point. I think it's worth even getting into slightly more detail about what this means, because coaches listening, parents, you know, folks that are involved in different types of professions, this concept might be something you're familiar with. And if I'm understanding correctly, when you're referring to these mass emails from services, this is, you know, they've done their data collection, right? And they're sending that same email to who knows how many schools. And correct. You as a and coach you are to say, well, I have no idea how if this kid is serious about this school at all, because there could be 100 other coaches getting the same email. Am I really going to spend my time learning more about this kid versus the one who reached out to me directly, showed they did a little homework, they actually know, they do know what our program is?
That is exactly it. And like you and I as adults, you know, we're more versed in email than I would expect a high school kid to be. But right. you and I could probably sit here for an hour and just complain about how many emails we delete mm-hmm. every day because our name is in bold in the subject line. Then you just know it's a spam email or a sale email. And, you know, that's what these things do. All these services, it's about efficiency and bang for your buck. And you're trying to do this with a populace, college coaches, who are probably the most quality time and detail-oriented group of people that you could possibly imagine. And Ross, to bring this full circle, the most interesting thing about the data of the book was it wasn't like your typical political sorting data. It wasn't like a polarizing issue where it was like 50% on one side, 50% on the other. Hmm. With one notable exception, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, all of the data was a groupthink for the coaches. Like, they're an incredibly hive-minded professional group. So you nailed it. If the email sort of looks or smells like something that was sort of sent haphazardly by an agency, a coach is going to ignore it.
And so much of this, and we're talking about how you as a young athlete represent who you are, right? And as you're growing into adulthood, you'll learn that you really, what you have is your reputation, right? And you really want to be careful about who else you allow to represent you, and who you're associating with, right? Some of these services may be totally reputable and may conduct their business in a positive way, and coaches may have a positive view of them. Some of them might not. And when I see that the name of that service coming in my email, that's all I'm looking at. I'm saying, well, I'm not listening to these people. And to give people a very, like, an example of what this looks like at a, 1% of the effort level of what a coach has to do to recruit a player, is I get the same kind of things, for podcast guests, right?
I'm
a podcast
host.
70-80% of the time, they're irrelevant. That somebody's just plugging in a bunch of the same thing and sending it out to everything they can find. There are other times maybe they're irrelevant, but I had one not long ago where one came in. I said, oh, this guest is pretty interesting. Responded to the rep, said, yeah, I'd like to have them on the show. Here's how you get scheduled. Couple of days. Oh, sorry. Their schedule's really busy. They're not available, right?
Bingo.
What happened? I don't know, right? But in either case, this person wasn't really serious about being interested in being on the show. And that took me, it was all I had to do was send them an email, but it was still a waste of my time. Now imagine how much more time coaches have to spend on going through the process of recruiting a student athlete and figuring out their roster. Do they want to do that for somebody who's not really serious?
Let me share a very, very real and poignant anecdote with you based on what you just said. I don't want to bash the entire genre. Some of my favorite brains to pick from a basketball coaching perspective, some of my favorite people exist at the high school and AAU level. There are tremendous services out there. There are tremendous AAU coaches out there and high school coaches out there. But there's also the category that you just described. And here's a very poignant example. I worked at the Division III level for a long time. And by the time I figured out recruiting, I got pretty good at it. So I'm in my early 30s working on taking a D3 program that was really, really good and trying to get them to the next level. And I reached out to nearly a dozen quote unquote elite services or AAU coaches, and none of them replied to me. Now, I'm a little petty, and I happen to have a little recruiting log on my phone. Here are the coaches that I have good relationships with. Here are the numbers I've saved. And, you pull those up and you see a track record of your communication and that these people have never responded. In my first week working at the Division I level, all of them reached out to me. I got a kid for you. I got a kid for you. And in my mind, I'm like, I've watched kids from your program get pushed to the D1 level and then transfer because it wasn't right for them. You never took any of my calls. And the moment it benefits you, the moment you see that a relationship with me potentially benefits you, it's, I got a kid for you. I got a kid for you. I got a kid for you. I don't think people at the high school level realize how often this happens for college coaches. And it makes some of them, frankly, desensitized to the service process.
So, I mean, that's a great illustration of if you are one of those, student athletes, right? Then that's a dynamic you want to be aware of and not get caught in the middle of, right? Because you see a message from that person who wasted your time last time or ignored you when you needed, a little help. And you unfortunately there's there's some kid behind that, and it's like, well, I this person that's representing them, I can't trust what they're going to do, or I don't, or they're bombarding me with who knows. So we got into a lot of great stuff here, but there's even a little more specifics right in the book. GEAR, gear, this framework that you've been, you've developed through your work, and you've been coaching young athletes through. What's it about?
So, based on the data that I collected from college coaches and then based on my conversations with athletes, I wanted to have something that was just a quick hit acronym of like, here's what you really need to focus on. And, it's kind of funny. You just spend like an hour staring at four words and you're like, how does this work? And then all of a sudden it was gear and here we go. So, please do not read too much into the word gear itself. That was just a happy accident. It's much more about the four words. So, G is for growth oriented. And we've talked a little bit about what your attitude is like. A growth oriented mindset specifically is someone that is willing to learn from their mistakes, someone that understands that, the road to success is not a straight line and we can develop a little bit of resilience and keep moving forward, and people that are excited about continuing to grow. That's a huge one that colleges are looking for. The next one is E for engaged. In short, don't be a dud. You have to, like what we've been talking about, Ross. You have to take more ownership of your experience. You have to be able to engage with college coaches in conversation. The other part of engagement is what you look like when you play. If you're locked in, you're engaged. If you're on the bench, even when you're not playing, but you're going nuts and celebrating your teammates and calling out plays when they do a good job, that means you're engaged. A, and we talked about this a little bit as we talked about how you kind of filter your choices and find mentorship. A is all about your awareness. You better getting to know yourself. What exactly it is that you're looking for. An interesting data point that I was really surprised by was coaches actually have a very real expectation that you are self-aware in the recruiting process, particularly when it comes to your own strengths and limitations. So it was very important to me that that was there too. And then finally is R for ready. And when you combine these three things, when you consistently have a growth-oriented mindset, when you're good at engaging, when you're really self-aware, then you're kind of ready for whatever comes your way. And if you had a similar experience to me, age 18 to 23, that college age time is really when you realize for the first time, oh, life happens insanely fast. And I literally have like 5 hours to react to anything, regardless of the magnitude of it. Once you're ready, you'll be able to handle those things resiliently. And that's when you're really good to go.
Yeah, that's excellent. And certainly, to that engaged part, right? Coming kind of before ready. I mean, it takes all of us our own amount of time to get ready, but you can work your way through it, as long as you stay engaged, you work hard. You sh there's a these the athlete who is maybe undersized or less talented or whatever, but is just a bulldog, right?
Yes.
Works their butt off, all that. I mean, it's a cliche for a reason, right? Because every coach loves that athlete, that person that's part of their program or their team, depending on the sport, and is somebody they can count on to just bring their effort every day, no matter what's going on. And that's somebody that is coachable, right? The number one, they'll learn because they'll listen to what we're doing. They'll try to put it into practice. I can project that whatever this the ability of this athlete is today, that it's going to improve because they'll work at it. And that gives a certain confidence level to a coach who can't control everything, right? There's only so many
Yes.
things in your control. But if I can recruit athletes that I know will put in the work, that's one thing that I don't have to worry about,
That is, that's exactly it though. And it's funny you talk about cliches. The older we get, the more we realize that every cliche is actually true. Like that's what this is. And I don't want young people to make every mistake that I made. Learn from me. For God's sake, learn from me. I did not have this together. when I was your age. So use this as an opportunity to not just learn from me. And this was the biggest intent of my book. I did not want to be dude in a sports coat on cover of book peddling product. I wanted it to be, take it from these people. I was privileged enough to survey and interview more than 20 coaches who had won conference championships, which is something I haven't done yet. So take it from those people.
Right.
Don't take it from me. This is what matters.
Right. Right. And when you think of what, you know, what mistakes frustrate coaches the most, mental mistakes, lack of engagement. I'm not engaged. I'm not paying attention, and lack of effort. Right. I mean, you can certainly make mistakes when you're trying hard, and sometimes trying too hard can lead to a mistake, but every coach will take that and work with that over the athlete who's making mistakes because they're not trying hard. So again, a way to differentiate yourself, a way to show that you're a fit for a, you know, a spot that you're interested in when there are so many others who are interested in these things. Are there, I think we've talked a lot about the things that coaches do want. Are there myths about what they want or what they think, or, you know?
Yeah. Great question. And I'll look to kind of get it out of the realm of some of the things that we've discussed. I would say the two biggest myths that I really want to bust with this book. One is about the prestige, quote unquote, of your high school and AAU team. And one is about your, what's the most polite way that I can say this? Your identity as an athlete. So we'll start with the easier one, which is high school and AAU. I had an interview with a coach that last year won a national championship in their sport. And I talked to them about AAU and high school. And one of the things they shared with me is that they did not think a single member of their national championship team could have afforded to go to the best private high school in the region or play for the most prestigious AAU team in the region. Yet she got all of them. And what I think young people need to understand is if you take these steps that we've been talking about to grow your soft skills and you hit the talent benchmarks, it is a college coach's job to find you. I have been in high school gyms in the middle of nowhere. Philadelphia is not just in Pennsylvania. It's a small town in supremely northern New York where we got to watch one of our favorite recruits play. You can find people, and that is our jobs. And if we don't do that job well enough, we literally lose our jobs. So it's not about who you play for. It's about how you play. And coaches are much more understanding than you think they are about what you have around you, how you showcase when you play. So it's okay to be where your feet are and go as hard as you can. And do not let anyone tell you otherwise. Now, if you want to go have a different high school experience, by all means, that's awesome. I've also been to tournaments where I've seen some of the best high school teams in the country play. And normally I sit there and go, wow, this is the future of basketball and this is phenomenal. But by no means does that have to be your journey. So that's part one, Ross. Part two, one of the most shocking pieces of data to me was about identity. I asked 50 coaches, how important is it to you that the person you're recruiting has a single sport focus? So is high school basketball all they do if they want to be a basketball player? Is high school softball all they do if they want to go play softball? It was the most extreme response of anything I asked. 48 out of the 50 coaches responded with a 1 out of 10. Nobody cares. And we talked a little bit before about services. And what I want these young people to understand is that if someone is really pushing you on playing only one sport, I need you and your parents to take a quick step back and ask yourself, honestly, is this for my benefit or is this for their benefit? Because I am now telling you with the data to back it, no one in college cares. No one. In fact, we were hired for a rebuild. So if there's anyone that you'd think should be looking for single sport athletes, it's us. Of our four that we brought in our first recruiting class, three of them were all conference in a different sport. Mm-hmm. And all those three sports were different: volleyball, soccer, track and field. Yeah. And I talked to so many people in the process of putting this book together, Ross, that said that their most impactful coach was not actually a basketball coach, because basketball was where they were always good. Mm-hmm. It was when they played a different sport and they weren't the best, and the coach had to teach them the kind of things that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, those are great insights. So based on, you know, what we've talked about today, or at least this recruiting process we've talked about, do you have an opinion on what pieces of it, or how much high school coaches and or parents, or, you know, if their roles are a little different, should be involved with it, what they should help with?
Great question. Parents are not going to like this, so I apologize in advance. In order, like, let's look at this. There is no child listening to this that's going to get this reference, and I'm going to give it anyway just to crack myself up. I want you to think about this like Diana Ross and the Supremes, or like Lionel Richie and the Commodores, like any of those references. The recruit is Diana Ross. The recruit is Lionel Richie. The Commodores are coaches, trainers, parents, in that order. Mm-hmm. It is much more valuable to a college coach to hear from a trainer or a coach, especially if that coach is reputable. Like, for example, most college coaches have a handful of high school coaches and AAU coaches that they really trust. Even if it's not a kid on their team, I might call a coach and be like, hey, this kid plays in your region, what do you know? And that's when we can hear that information, like hard worker, always in the gym, takes feedback really well, still working on their weak hand. Like, I got to get him to dribble with their left hand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than that, good to go. That message coming from a parent doesn't hold the same weight. My wife and I are expecting our first. I see some pictures of children in your background. So I already think my child is the greatest thing ever, and they're not even here. They're negative 3 months old. Yeah. So, you know, I know how parents get, and I think sometimes parents inadvertently step in the way of their child showing that they have autonomy, that they are ready to keep growing, and they're ready for this experience themselves. So I would strongly encourage coaches of any variety, AAU, high school, trainers, get more involved. I actually talk in the book about, if you're sending an email to a coach, include contact info for coaches and trainers so coaches can try to build that network. Parents, I want you to go through the recruiting process like your child is learning how to drive a car and you are in the passenger seat navigating them. You know when the car is about to careen off a cliff. And if you get there, make the necessary evasive maneuvers. But other than that, teach from the passenger seat.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I mean, that can be a hard message to hear. And I think there's two reasons why the coach holds a lot of weight, and it, you know, credibility and accountability. And, you know, the parents who don't like it might be focused on that credibility piece, and well, what do they know that I don't know? But the accountability piece is important. The same thing we talked about earlier around, you know, relationships and reputations, that if somehow I, as a coach, not that this would even work, but let's say I was able to kind of bamboozle some college program into offering a scholarship to one of my athletes that's not really a good fit to be playing at that program at that level.
Sure.
Next year, that coach isn't going to listen to anything I have to say about, you know, any athletes. So I have to, you know, be on it. Not only do I know the sport, I understand the nuances, the relative differences of talent and work ethic and ability and things that somebody who's not immersed in it may not. But also, I know that next year there's going to be more athletes in the following year and the following year. And if I want my word to mean something, I need to be honest. And if I'm a student athlete or a parent, again, another good resource to go and get that honest feedback for, and probably something that you will have to often solicit and be proactive about and be willing to really have what might be some hard conversations. I mean, the coach's job as your coach is to build you up, build your confidence, right? But their job as an advisor or a mentor around your college recruiting might be to say, look, you're really great in my program. You're not a fit for that level. We should be looking here. and this could be a great place for you or whatever it may be. And again, it's not, you know, always easy to hear things about ourselves that are counter to our, yes, our hopes and dreams. And yet they could put us in the right place. Right.
Ross, you just mentioned something that's extremely important to me, which is that honesty and accountability. So let me address this in two ways, because I think it's a good way to bring the whole thing full circle. Just because I spent the last decade and a half in college coaching doesn't mean that I think every college coach is good or the right fit for everyone. The importance of having that mentorship and having that honest conversation and open dialogue when you're high school age is so that you can go on some of these visits. And if you identify someone that is wrong for you, you can see that too. It's not just about finding the right thing. And especially as you get older and, you know, once you're in your 30s in America and everything is an ad and a sale, you're much more versed at sort of filtering that. But oftentimes, like if you're a high school kid, your college search is really the first time you're truly filtering for fit. Mm-hmm. So that matters. Now, the final thing, and this is maybe the accountability piece for parents. I know I mentioned to you before that there was one piece of data that I was going to probably get back to later. Here's that piece of data. The only polarizing piece of data from the research was how college coaches handle over-involved parents. So there is a strong contingent that includes some very, very successful coaches that have just sort of said, I'm not sure this is something that will ever be reset. This is the new name of the game. I have rules with parents, but parents are just more involved than it is what it is. But then there is an equally successful and influential counterweight that literally has shared with me, like, here are the specific things that me and my staff do on purpose during the recruiting process to see how parents are going to react. And if there's a red flag, we're done with that recruit. So that accountability piece, I want to expand it a little bit. A common question that college coaches are asking themselves right now is, can I hold you accountable the way that I need to grow you while these parents are this over-involved? And if the answer is no, it is a coin flip that the college coach backs off. And I think it's critically important for parents and recruits to know that.
Yeah, I'm glad we got that in. For those who heard our previous episode with Heather Sumlin, which was, you know, more focused on athletes that are a little younger, but a similar concept of matching your child's level of passion, basically, right? And understanding, okay, when kids are first getting involved in sports, how, and maybe they're playing different sports, how much do they care about a particular sport? How good do they want to be? How much do they want to invest in it? And one, not having the parents be over-invested in something that the kids aren't quite as passionate about, but also the reverse. But that carries through, right? That these coaches, I'm sure, have seen examples of kids whose parents have really kind of dragged them along throughout their entire career, and they've never learned to have that self-direction, autonomy, self-motivation. And, you know, it's a coin flip. They back off. It's a coin flip once you get to campus if you haven't really been responsible for that yourself, if you're ready for it, or again, if you really are committed to it, if you're not given an opportunity to show that, right? And, you know, so many things, it's hard because parents want to be there, but the best thing, yes, to do is to help kids be able to really demonstrate that for themselves. So Jared, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Before we close, wanted to ask, is there, you know, one, where can people find the book, but anything else you're working on, anything, any other resources listeners can check out?
Yeah, I am parentheses poorly executing a social media campaign. I'm realizing very quickly that I'm old and not cool, but I'm still trying. And there is informational content being uploaded every business day. And you can follow me to find it at Jared the Coach on all major social media platforms. That's all one word, at Jared the Coach. That's on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, all the, where all the cool kids are, right? Right, Ross? Yes. Website, just to make it easy, the website and the book have the same name. So it's nailtherecruitingprocess.com. You can get the book there. It releases later this spring. In the meantime, you can download the first chapter for free, see if it could be a good fit for you. And that first chapter is exclusively about the big myths in college athletics that I'm trying to bust. I'm also trying to meet people where they are. So there's avenues for free resources there. If you're willing to have a session recorded, you can work with me for free and we'll put it out there on YouTube for other people to learn from it. So I'm really trying to meet people where they are at Jared the Coach and nailtherecruitingprocess.com.
Excellent. We'll put those links below and check those out if it's helpful to you. If you have young athletes in your life that are interested in kind of looking at the collegiate level, it's complicated. There's a lot going on. You can never know too much and can present such great opportunities, right? For learning and for growth and for competition. So check those things out. We'll put those links below. If you're not already, please do subscribe to Sideline Sessions to hear the rest of our spring season here. It's available wherever you get your podcast. If you're listening to this somewhere, you could subscribe there probably, or else you could find another platform that you like. And also visit bpodcast.network to learn out about all of our other shows focused on education and parenting and all the topics in the space. So Jared, thanks again for being on the show.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Great questions. And thanks for having me.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.